Radio Influence. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day, Val, and
Beans. It's Wednesday.
Feels like it's been a while.
It does. It's been a while. It's been since what?
Last Wednesday,
maybe. A week ago. Wow. So I conveniently forgot that I'd be traveling home from Miami on Monday and wouldn't be able to do the show from the car.
I know. But you know what? I think it all worked. Every once in a while, it's good to just say, hey, let's little palate cleanser.
Yeah. And, you know, your show Friday was absolutely amazing. Amazing.
I'm glad that it came off. Yeah. You like that?
Oh, yeah. Goodness. Yes. Absolutely.
Especially in a time when we need such some inspiration to hear from a guy who has not only gone on to do some really important things in the media, but to have started where he started. It's one thing to say, well, I was raised a Democrat and my parents, I just pretty much absorbed all of their thoughts and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden I saw, like Brandon Strzok, he saw something that tipped him off to media manipulation. It's one thing to be like that. It's another thing to actually be on the road with Bernie Sanders, documenting their campaigns, being that deep in and have this turnaround. I really, if the ice can crack like that for him, it can crack for everybody.
Agreed.
I just hope that we don't have to give up too much along the way to get there.
Agreed. We have a ton to talk about today, but I have to tell you, I'm sitting right now in the Talk 94.5 studio because I've been doing 6 to 10, filling in for the absolutely amazing Liz Calloway on the Liz Calloway Show with her co-host Nick Summers, who is absolutely
fit.
It is. Listen, Frank, I'm having a ball doing this show.
Radio's amazing.
So
it's an amazing medium.
So much fun. It's just so much fun. And I tried to get Nick to come on in here and say hello, but he's shy and he doesn't want to. So shy, a radio guy is shy. He's great. Liz is great too. I'm always like, oh my gosh, how am I going to fill this slot? Like she's amazing. So, but it's fun. I mean, it's really good. So I'm going to do the same thing Friday. I'm going to stick around. The show just ended at 10. Going to stick around, record the show with you on Friday. And
is it like a full on production where you have call screeners and everything?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh God, to have call screeners.
I'm sitting here looking at him through the glass right now. He can probably hear me. He's making faces. Stop it. Stop it. Don't talk about me. He's shaking his head. Now he's laughing. I see a blush. There's a little red on his cheeks right there. I see it. See, he's laughing.
Oh, man. That is such a privilege to have a call screener.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Frank, you've been amazing. Shocked quite a few times.
Yeah, and I'm okay with the shock, for sure. I'm totally okay with the shock. I like it. It's almost because it's everybody's as... nobody expects what's on the other end. Me, nor does anybody in the audience as well. But, you know, so if you're talking about something that is very, very fine focused, it is an unbelievable advantage as a host and a writer to be able to know that there's a mechanism in place to make sure that every call that comes in is expressing one point or another that's in line with the theme of the night, and it doesn't derail anything. So some nights it's great to just have open calls, very Art Bellish, and let anything come on in from the other side. But what you're in right now, that is the bee's knees.
It really is. It's you know, first of all, it's great to be able to talk to my local community, which is something that I don't get to do very often. So that's really awesome because I'm, you know, talking to the people that I live with here. We were talking about a lot of local issues, how important it is, the mask mandates. It was just great. And I had Lee Smith on today. He joined me for a 20-minute interview at 8 o'clock. So that was depressing, to be honest. He was very, very pessimistic, actually suggested that we get rid of Durham should President Trump be reelected.
Wow, Durham.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that he's been getting a little bit of a resurgence in attention to his work because of the movie.
Did you see it?
I have not yet, but I have had several people send it to me. I'm like, well, I read the book and we interviewed the author.
Frank.
I still have not seen that, though.
Frank, if there were ever a film to send to anybody who was not familiar with the story at all, or even just a tad bit familiar, this is it. It does such an amazing job of encapsulating the story. Such an amazing job. I just was blown away by it. And
I wonder if I can talk to Lee about getting the rights to stream it on my website one night for a viewing party with my viewers.
He actually has nothing to do with it.
Really?
Yeah. He was in it, but he had nothing to do with the production or the distribution or anything.
Okay. Well, either way, I got to watch this then.
Yeah. We should be able to stream. I mean, right now they're selling it for $6, but it's worth every penny. Every penny. So everybody out there should get the movie. And But he's pessimistic, and not really pessimistic in that there will never be any accountability. He's very upset that there is not any accountability already. And he is very upset that we may need to, hope. He said he has no doubt. He doesn't think that Biden will win. But they're leaving it open that if he does win, there's, a chance all this could go away. And it was a coup against and an ongoing coup against an American president. And everybody in the country needs to know. And I asked him, what's going on right now? Do you think with this declassification, all this information that we're getting, are there good guys on the inside looking to just get as much information out as possible before the election so that the American people have it? And he agreed with that assessment.
What I would love to ask somebody like him is, well, I'm also frustrated. I wanted to see a steamroller run right through Washington, D.C., a steamroller. But at what point this year in 2020, once you cross into 2020, what's the threshold for it doesn't matter? It's going to have to all the real stuff is going to have to happen after the election anyhow, because even if this was even if things started flying, indictments started flying in July, in June, in May, none of this was going to be moved on until after the holidays anyhow.
I'm a little shocked because honestly, there were percolations that things were going to happen recently within the past couple weeks and everything kept getting postponed. But we also started seeing that this is much bigger than we originally thought it was, encompassing the Clinton Foundation, more Ukraine stuff. It's a big deal. So, it's encompassing that Ukraine, all kinds of other stuff that we didn't even realize. And what's interesting to me is, Frank, just yesterday, we got this report that because Bash had stepped down, his investigation stopped without any indictments on leaking. On unmasking. And the entire internet exploded when WAPO reported that. The Washington Post, for goodness sakes. The Washington Post.
I didn't even see that. My first assumption was Bash's job was done. And then the second thing that came on in was, no, it's not done. It's ongoing. It's just been all the work has been given to someone new, or I forget. But I didn't hear anything about it's all over and there's nothing coming.
Well, no. And that wasn't what the story was. It was that he decided to resign all of a sudden and go to private world, and everybody freaked out. Right. But this report from WAPO came out that said that meant that, due to anonymous sources or whatever, that meant now that there was not going to be any accountability for any of the unmaskings, and the investigation was over. He closed up shop. That's it. As a matter of fact, I have a Fox clip here that we're going to play for you really quickly. Listen, this is all based on the Washington Post. Here we go.
This story is still developing as we speak at this moment. The federal prosecutor tapped by Attorney General William Barr to look into this probe has reportedly closed up shop. He is no longer working on the investigation. What he had been looking at was the Obama administration's intelligence community and what is known as the process of unmasking. Now, Attorney John Bash departed the Justice Department last week, and with him goes the prospect of any type of explosive report or criminal prosecution of Obama-era officials.
That is completely misleading. As though Bash was in charge of the entire thing and now he's leaving and everything goes with him, right? Complete lie, but let's keep listening.
senior Trump officials, including the president himself, have claimed that the Obama team mismanaged the process of unmasking, also known as requesting the identities of individuals whose names and identities are redacted in intelligence documents. Now, I'm going to read you the list of officials who made these requests. They include Vice President Joe Biden, FBI Director James Comey, Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew, CIA Director John Brennan, DNI James Clapper, Chief of Staff Dennis McDonough, and UN Ambassador Samantha Power. Now, unmasking itself, fairly standard operating procedure. Top national security officials who look at intelligence documents as part of their job are allowed to request that individuals become unmasked if they think that that individual poses a direct threat to national security. Now, also breaking tonight, Martha, there are new developments in a separate DOJ investigation, a probe led by U.S. Attorney John Durham. Fox News has obtained a 94-page document used by the FBI to keep track of information provided by Christopher Steele at the start of the 2016 Russia probe. Among the revelations, as we continue to comb through this document, the FBI believed Russians were trying to exploit Trump's, quote, personal...
So blah, 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 blah. She goes on. She talks about the Durham investigation. The Bash investigation was an offshoot of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
She conflates two things, completely doesn't understand what she's talking about, and is literally reading from a show about the Washington Post, okay? Then, as we're talking about this morning, the New York Post, which, as you talked about a few weeks ago, is on fire with actual information lately, comes out with a report. I said to everybody, look, even if there were no indictments on unmaskings, I wouldn't be surprised and didn't expect them. It's an administrative process. To find criminality in there is like finding a needle in a haystack. It's ridiculously difficult, right? So that wouldn't even have fazed me personally, but everybody ran with it as though it meant that nothing, everything was done, everything was over, and that's not the case. So we get this morning an article from the New York Post that says the following. Hold on. It says, acting U.S. Attorney Greg Sofer will pick up where John Bash left off in the unmasking investigation. It says, acting U.S. Attorney Greg Sofer will take up the investigation into the unmaskings of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn after his predecessor resigned from the Justice Department, according to a report on Tuesday. He was named by Attorney General William Barr to replace John Bash, the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Texas, who announced Monday he's stepping down. Without commenting on any specific investigation, any matters that John Bash was overseeing will be assumed by Greg Sofer, a senior Justice Department official told Fox News.
Why doesn't anybody ask me to assume these things?
Could we start assuming things? Because I think if we started just assuming things, Frank, and throwing things out there without any like real meat behind them, we would explode in popularity and people would follow us everywhere.
See, here's the thing I don't understand. You said that you wouldn't be devastated if nothing really came from the unmasking thing.
Right.
But you know, here's the thing. When you plug it in to the greater scam, all the omissions, all of the flat out lies, all of the editing to make people like Carter Page seem like he's an unknown quantity so they can start spying, all these things that have been going on, especially leading up to the fact that a 3.5 year investigation went nowhere. But what they did accomplish over 3.5 years is constant propaganda programming in the media to drill into people's heads that something that was not happening was happening. The unmaskings were political in nature to help create that atmosphere of criminality that was projected onto Michael Flynn, to the Trump campaign. How could that ever be let go?
They have to prove it, Frank, with hard evidence.
The hard evidence is this entire thing was a scam, and this went hand in glove with it. It should be wrapped up.
Listen, the unmaskings are a legal process. They're allowed. They're not illegal. I get what your frustration is, and I understand it. It encapsulates the frustration of a lot of people. It really does. But the unmaskings in and of themselves. Now, in the General Flynn case specifically, that's a different story. But unmaskings as a whole, they have to be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they broke a criminal statute, and there aren't very many of them around unmaskings. They're an administrative process. Unmaskings are an administrative process. So it's a very difficult crime.
So then perhaps General Flynn is, it's just up to him to sue the U.S. government for Fourth Amendment violations then.
No. I think that in the case of General Flynn, there may have been criminality in the unmaskings.
Okay, good. Because I can't stand watching Samantha Power tweet anymore.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. In the case of General Flynn, I think that there may be criminality with the unmaskings.
All right.
That's why I made that distinguishing, you know, because there were other unmaskings, Frank.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, I know. But in general, that's, it pains me to think that. Yeah.
But freaking, I know. And you know that that's the thing. People are done. They're so fed up. I mean, but just to give you an idea, like, again, nothing has leaked out of this investigation, really nothing. And then we get this narrative spun up by Washington Post. Everybody jumps on board with it as though it's the truth. The Washington Post is now dictating to conservatives what's going on in the Durham investigation. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we get the Justice Department making a formal statement after that. That the investigation is ongoing, has been picked up by SOFR. So think about that for what it is.
I'm thinking.
I know. Well, in other news, because Spygate is obviously not something that people want to talk about anymore.
God have mercy.
Did you read the Mike Flynn Jr. op-ed that I published?
On Uncover DC, yeah. I read it that night.
So
I thought it was great.
It was great. And I think that the message is very clear. And I think that it should be taken for what it's worth from a family who has been through something that nobody else on this planet can even speak to. If they can do it, so can you.
They got through.
They're still going through the motions. But yeah. And of course, we're going to talk about today this breaking news with Hunter Biden. You tweeted about it. I saw.
Yeah. Oh, well, I retweeted that thing from the Post. And let me just reiterate what I tweeted on out there. This is the reason why last week I went out and I signed up for the weekly subscription of the Epoch Times. And I signed up for the extended weekly subscription home delivery of the New York Post, because I know that during the week I would not be able to read a daily newspaper with all the digital media I go through. Mm-hmm. But on the weekends, I thought it'd be nice to just sit back with some coffee and have a real paper to hold. But the New York Times, New York Post, as you say, obviously, that you can tell that this is a organization in New York that looked around at the Times. They looked at the New York Daily News, which has completely—they hit the bottom of the barrel the first. They are the absolute craziest in New York Daily News. They're looking at all of these print outlets that have destroyed themselves over the last few years. They read the tea leaves, and they actually made an effort to be a newspaper. They had that you can find some gems in the New York Post. It's not going to be perfect, but they actually make an effort, and this is great. This is great that somebody out there is talking about this. The Biden thing. Smoking gun email reveals how Hunter Biden introduced Ukrainian businessman to VP dad. And I mean, they pretty much use each other like resumes and calling cards and all that stuff. It's to think that to put out anything out there that is just consequential and they're not enriching their own family by the offices that they're attaining. I don't know why you would want to defend that in the first place.
How could you?
Especially since the people who are trying to evade this topic have spent the last few years very embarrassingly bringing up emoluments clauses.
I mean,
with the president.
Yeah, for real. And not only that, but you know, there's other stuff in here too. Let's tell the story real quick of how they got this information. It's pretty interesting, if you ask me.
Go for it.
Someone with a sticker on this laptop, apparently like of the Biden Foundation or whatever, brings this laptop into a repair shop in Delaware. This is what the story says. The guy in the repair shop takes it, fixes it, tries to fix it anyway, and the person who dropped it off never comes back. So he takes a copy of the hard drive. On the hard drive, he finds all of this information that we're looking at right now today, which there's more and more of. Calls the FBI, says, oh my gosh, look what I found. Christopher Wray's FBI comes on over, subpoenas the information from the guy, takes possession of the laptop. But before they do, he makes a copy of it. Now, Christopher Wray got this in December of 2019 in the midst of the freaking impeachment, where this could have really come in handy, don't you think?
I want this man slapped across the stupid face.
Can you believe it?
I'm moving away from throat punches. I just want to embarrass people with slaps across the face.
Slaps right across the face.
Open palm. I condition my palm with the kung fu a lot. This would be a great, great thing for me. It would not hurt me at all.
Listen, I would be the first one to buy a ticket. If anybody wants to see this, you can email
Quite Frankly Podcast at Gmail or ProtonMail.com. If you want to see me slap literally everybody at the FBI across the face.
But wait, there's more.
Think about this, though, because it really does run. Oh, son of a bitch.
What?
Why is this happening?
Oh, he can't hear me.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, you're
you
back.
Hear me?
Yes.
Okay, so, what, did you hear me curse?
No. You said son of a
okay,
bee.
Okay,
son of a bee? That's nothing.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Keep going.
Okay. I didn't know we were connected. But either way, think about the mirror of this situation. 4 years ago, we had the laptop of Anthony Weiner. And we had the FBI trying to really turn the other direction and so badly wanting to just push the football past the goal line and not have to deal with this until after the election. Hopefully Hillary Clinton wins. And now we have another stroke of fate where this guy has this laptop that nobody comes and claims, and it just happens to have this. The greatest exculpatory evidence yet in the impeachment situation that shows up. And once again, the FBI drags its feet.
While they go off and, you know, did you read anything into this hearing yesterday with these supposed kidnappers?
No.
They had a patsy in there working. He was the one who hatched the whole plot.
Okay, so then pretty much what's going on. Oh, yeah, yes, yes. You know what? I saw the Epoch Times bring that up.
Yeah, they were literally the whole thing was a setup. And the lawyers for these guys, who I don't agree with, obviously, are saying that you guys are the ones who drove this entire thing. How are you sitting here literally trying to convict these guys, indict these guys, when you were the ones who started it?
Well, it's the same exact thing that the FBI was doing for years to justify the ongoing destruction of civil liberties under the guise of fighting terrorism. How many people, disaffected idiots, losers on the internet, did the FBI go on out and profile as prime for radicalization and try to coax into a bomb plot and then giving them inert objects to put together into a fake bomb and then arresting them and showing them off to the media as if they had just won a trophy bass or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, this has gone on for a long time. And that was just supposed to embolden us in our continued fight against terrorism that was coming from overseas. Now, of course, everything is domestic. They're taking the same tricks and they're using against us domestically.
So frustrating. There was another one, they say, for Virginia Governor Northam. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, they're starting that one now. Someone's kidnapping Northam. Someone was going to kidnap Northam.
Why? Who would want that man?
Who would want him in the first place?
Who would want him? Who would want Gretchen Whitmer? What would the kidnappings do? What would the ransoms be? Especially since this supposed plot to get Whitmer was on the same week that her own state Supreme Court put her back in her place.
Yeah.
What is the process of thinking?
Did you happen to catch the difference in who wore it better between Kristi Noem and Governor Whitmer?
No.
Oh, Brian took a picture of Kristi Noem on stage at AmpFest. in the blue dress, and everybody went gaga because she's absolutely stunning. And then it turned out that Governor Whitmer also wore that same dress. Oh boy. I think you can wonder who wore it better. It's not
Stretchin' Gretchen.
No, it's definitely not her. But back to the Hunter Biden stuff. Not only are there all of these horrible documents about Ukraine in here, which I have to dig into as soon as I get out of this studio, but it also says he made a copy of the hard drive, right? And he handed it over to Mayor Rudy Giuliani's lawyer, Robert Costello. And okay. Steve Bannon told the Post about the existence of the hard drive in late September, and Giuliani provided it on Sunday. Inside here as well are horrible photos, which are released of.
Oh, wait a second. Was this the one that I saw with the crack pipe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now that almost like made me sad.
Yeah, he's got, you know, he's in the bath one. There's supposedly a 12-minute video on here of him with a woman doing lewd things.
Gee, wait a second. I thought that was some kind of a Photoshop. Where the hell did we even see that today?
Oh, no, it's real. That's from this hard drive. That was on this computer. It's in the Post. It's in the Post.
Whose computer was this?
It was his. They think it was Biden's, Hunter Biden's.
Oh, wait, I see it now. Yeah, it is in the Post. That's where I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, man.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So this is all over the place right now. Everybody's talking about it, rightfully so. Biden's secret emails. Of course, Biden has called the lid on his campaign, and he's hiding away in his basement in Delaware right now as we speak, not taking any questions whatsoever about this. But when he does take questions, he'll just say, "That's been debunked and discredited. That's a lie, man. It's a lie. No one's ever said that. It's a lie." The headphones are on over here. So if you hear the Glenn Beck show, it's because the headphones are on and I don't know how to shut them off.
It's very, very distant Yeah. Oh, my God. This is unbelievable.
Yeah. He's literally in a bed, like either passed out or sleeping with the crack pipe hanging out of his mouth.
Yeah. And then you see, and then, this guy he's a mess.
He is a mess.
This looks like some of the storyboarding from the end of Goodfellas.
You know, what I anticipate the leftist media will do is to spin this around into some sympathetic plea for people who are having problems with drugs.
Yeah, stop abusing a man who's obviously going through a lot. Yeah. You know, look at what they're doing to a guy in distress. Distress.
The poor guy. In other news, Frank.
Okay.
The Supreme Court hearings yesterday.
Wonderful.
Did you like them?
Oh, I loved them, yeah. Well, I mean, from the standpoint of she's unflappable. Amy Coney Barrett is unflappable, and she's really just fascinating to watch. Just the still,
poise,
the calm. Oh my gosh! I noticed it myself, and then I saw somebody actually went and grabbed a time lapse.
Yes,
you saw that
Amy Klobuchar next to her.
Klobuchar is on the left-hand screen, and of course, Amy Coney Barrett is on the right. And they did a time lapse over the entire time that Amy Coney Barrett, Klobuchar had her little opportunity to speak and to ramble, and everybody was so incoherent. But she's moving all over the place. Her hands are flailing. Her head is bobbing. She's just nuts. And there is Amy Coney Barrett, where whether it's the beginning of the video or the end, she is still, and she's listening, and she's calm, and she's coherent. It was really amazing to watch that calm in the face of a really irate, irrational storm.
Yeah, and I mean, I really appreciate the fact actually that she was able to answer those questions without any notes.
You know what? I could too. Well,
I could too if I knew if I was sitting up there. Absolutely.
I mean, you think about her. She goes. She went and she's top of her class. She's been clerking. She's been in her job for so long. These you can be able to cite these cases like it's on the back of your hand if you're in the kind of in the kind of field that she's in. But other than that, Tracy, our constitutional system is so simple. It's so separate. The concept of separation of powers is so simple. You don't need any notes. This was supposed to be simple enough for your average farmer to be able to show up and know what his rights are and what the function of government is and isn't. And she was so resolute in that being able to separate politics from what her job applying the law as written is. There's nowhere you can go.
No, and it was great that, you know, they wanted her to make decisions and give them answers based on emotion. That's all they wanted was emotion. As a matter of fact, before we go on to that little topic a little bit more, I want to show you a clip of Klobuchar. This is just embarrassing for her. Are you ready?
Yes.
Casey, the Supreme Court's controlling opinion talked about the reliance interests on Roe v. Wade, which it treated in that case as super precedent. Is Roe a super precedent?
How would you define super precedent?
I thought someday I'd be sitting in that chair. I'm not. I'm up here, so I'm asking
okay,
you.
Okay, well, people use super precedent differently.
Okay.
The way that it's used in the scholarship and the way that I was using it in the article that you're reading from was to define cases that are so well settled that no political actors and no people seriously push for their overruling. And I'm answering a lot of questions about Roe, which I think indicates that Roe doesn't fall in that category. And scholars across the spectrum say that doesn't mean that Roe should be overruled, but descriptively it does mean that it's not a case that everyone has accepted and doesn't call for its overruling.
Here's what's interesting to me. You said that Brown is, and I know my time is running out, is a super precedent. That's something the Supreme Court has not even said, but you have said that. So if you say that, why won't you say that about Roe v. Wade, a case that the court's controlling opinion in that Planned Parenthood v. Casey case has described as a super precedent? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, Senator, I can just give you the same answer that I just did. I'm using a term in that article that is from the scholarly literature. It's actually one that was developed by scholars who are, you know, certainly not conservative scholars who take a more progressive approach to the Constitution. And again, you know, as Richard Fallon from Harvard said, Roe is not a super precedent because calls for its overruling have never ceased, but that doesn't mean that Roe should be overruled. It just means that it doesn't fall on the small handful of cases like Marbury versus Madison and Brown versus the board that no one questions anymore.
What is so freaking hard about that, Klobuchar? What is so hard to understand? She didn't even know what a super precedent was, let alone.
No. She thought, well, I have to ask about super precedent is a thing? Oh, great. Like, what is that? Can it be such a precedent that it actually takes the place of law passed by a legislative body? Like, this is what people like Amy Klobuchar. Yeah, and Hirono, they sit back and they pray for that there is some sort of way for their job to be overridden
by the courts
that they don't actually have to do their job. Because the other thing there too is not only it's not necessarily that, well, a bill passed in the House, it went through the Senate, and it got signed into law by the president, so it must be constitutional. No. I mean, just like it doesn't matter if you can get all three bodies of our government that is required to be able to make a bill into a law, to actually make it into a law that is legal, something that you actually have that is binding and is constitutional. Just like that doesn't matter. That could be struck down. It should be challenged by any citizen on out there, any state on out there. Same thing goes for opinions from judges. Why the hell would you say that, well, if you get enough judges to agree on this one opinion, then it must be settled as if you would be able to settle law that is passed constitutionally?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then Klobuchar, She also went on. You want to talk about grasping at straws. She went on and she's the one that asked the question. You know, right now, with her quivery voice, right now, 9 million votes have been cast. Do you think that it is right that we should be doing this right now without allowing the people to have their voices heard? And I'm saying to myself now,
then don't vote yet.
Don't vote. That's number one. Number two, she's trying to get Amy Barrett to be political again, but she didn't bite, and that was good. But since we can be political, and we can point out that the question itself was political in nature, it's wonderful for me to even consider where they're coming from to ask a question that implies that, well, we shouldn't do our jobs right now because a election is coming up in the future, that we need to honor the votes that have not been cast yet. So we need to dishonor the votes that have been cast in 2016 and 2018 because 2020 hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Like at what point during an election year does government cease to function out of respect for votes that have not been cast in a following election?
It's a great point. It's true.
Can somebody, but she can't ask Amy Klobuchar that because she would actually be playing inside of that political arena. I wish somebody would. Amy, Ms. Klobuchar, at what point during an election year are we not allowed to do our jobs to a certain point because an election is forthcoming? What does that mean? What does that mean to people who voted in 2016?
It means that a presidential term is actually only 3 years, not four.
Or three and a half.
Yeah.
Like, what is the cutoff? What's the cutoff that
whatever is most politically expedient for them at the time.
Well, what they're trying to do is they're trying to set a super precedent.
Oh.
That's what they're trying to do. To say, oh, it's a tradition. We should not, unless, of course, it's a Democratic supermajority. We can do whatever we want because, of course, the Democrat Party is America.
So gross. Frank.
That's the underlying premise of everything. The Democrat Party is America.
I have Mazzy Hirono here. This was just disgusting.
To ensure the fitness of nominees for a lifetime appointment to the federal bench or to any of the other positions for any of the committees on which they appear, I ask each nominee these two questions, and I will ask them of you. Since you became a legal adult, have you ever made unwanted requests for sexual favors or committed any verbal or physical harassment or assault of a sexual nature?
No, Senator Hirono.
Have you ever faced discipline or entered into a settlement related to this kind of conduct?
No, Senator.
Judge Barrett, do you think it is appropriate for justices to consider real-world impacts in their decision-making, as Justice Ginsburg noted in a number of dissents?
I can't.
No, Dad.
Her.
She's the worst.
So stupid.
Yeah.
Legitimately dumb.
Very dumb person. I can't believe that is the best that the island chain of Hawaii could come up with. That cannot be the best. There must be a papaya fruit out there that's better.
Coconuts. Now,
let me just say real quick, because it's what I said last night to this ridiculous exchange. This ridiculous exchange that comes off so much better when you're throwing it at a man, obviously, which is why all the old tricks fell flat on their face this time around. How the hell Hirono could say this and even pose the question when she is sharing a seat on the same committee as someone like Kamala Harris, who is now running on a ticket with a man who just a couple of months ago she proclaimed to the country she believed every last one of his sexual accusers, is beyond me. The fact that this woman, who is so, regardless of what you may or may agree with or disagree with in her judicial record or anything like that, she's standing there. She leads such a wholesome life. And to have to sit there and go and be peppered with these backhanded, weird and perverted questions and diatribes at times from the most degenerate, morally deficient people in the country is just offensive to watch. But she put up with it.
Actually, right now I'm looking at the TV that's on out here, and it looks like they've got a picture of her family up on a placard here. Let's listen for a second.
Protocol currently on first round of 8 chemotherapy treatments at Lurie Children's in Chicago. His treatment costs have now added up to $700,000.
Oh, it's
going to
be, never mind. It's a picture of a family who got someone suffering from cancer, and they're going to try and shame her because of the ACA. You know, the opening statements were like, Americans are terrified. They're terrified you're going to remove their health care.
And there's no way to get a child treatment for cancer before the ACA.
No.
There's no way. There was none. There was no options.
No options. No private health care. Employers didn't provide it to anybody. Did you hear her opening statement, or when Lindsey Graham asked her why she was doing it? Did you hear that part?
No, I didn't.
This is really good, and we'll break it down a little after here.
How's it feel to be nominated for the Supreme Court of the United States?
Well, Senator, I've tried to be on a media blackout for the sake of my mental health, but, you know, you can't keep yourself walled off from everything, and I'm aware of a lot of the caricatures that are floating around. So I think what I would like to say in response to that question is that, look, I've made distinct choices. I've decided to pursue a career and have a large family. I have a multiracial family. Our faith is important to us. All of those things are true, but they are my choices. And in my personal interactions with people, I mean, I have a life brimming with people who've made different choices, and I've never tried in my personal life to impose my choices on them. And the same is true professionally. I mean, I apply the law, and Senator, I think I should say why I'm sitting in this seat in response to that question, too, why I've agreed to be here, because I don't think it's any secret to any of you or to the American people that this is a really difficult, some might say excruciating, process. And Jesse and I had a very brief amount of time to make a decision with momentous consequences for our family. We knew that our lives would be combed over for any negative detail. We knew that our faith would be caricatured. We knew our family would be attacked. And so we had to decide whether those difficulties would be worth it, because what sane person would go through that if there wasn't a benefit on the other side? And the benefit, I think, is that I'm committed to the rule of law and the role of the Supreme Court in dispensing equal justice for all. And I'm not the only person who could do this job, but I was asked, and it would be difficult for anyone. So why should I say someone else should do the difficulty if the difficulty is the only reason to say no? I should serve my country. And my family's all in on that because they share my belief in the rule of law.
I.e., I know how crazy the left is, and I still did this anyway.
Yep.
That's clearly what she was saying.
Yep.
Which is great, because it means she gets it.
They all have to. And if someone like Brett Kavanaugh didn't get it before what he went through, he does now.
Oh, boy. Yes.
And even though you got to put on that poker face, I don't know how, as a human being with a beating heart, you don't take a giant note on what you went through and scribble that down in your notebook in your head. Said, all right. Okay. Yeah, no, I knew things were bad, but this is a virtual lynch mob here.
Yeah. Yeah. Goodness me, oh my. So we've got that. I wanted to ask you too, Frank.
We're back.
What? Hello?
Nothing.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I was cut off for a second, but we're back.
Oh, okay. I wanted to ask you a question. Did you see Chris Ann Hall?
Yep, I actually just texted her before we went live. I tweeted it on out. I have to try to, because she's not on Twitter anymore, so I had to tweet it for her.
Yeah.
She got kicked off of Twitter.
She also got kicked off a ball. She didn't, but someone she was traveling with yesterday got kicked off a plane.
His first Southwest flight, first flight since the lockdowns and all that stuff. And she was on a flight with her husband, I think her son, and a few other friends, and they kicked him off the plane. I think he's a black Trump supporter.
Yep.
And he has a Trump hat on.
And a mask.
But he also had his mask on, too. The problem is that he took the mask off to be able to eat some peanuts and take a sip of his coffee. And they asked him to get off the plane at that point, And you hear a lot of the sheep around, just get off the plane.
Yeah.
We have to go, you freaks. I want to, you know. And then, but Chrisanne Hall is very calmly trying to get the flight attendants to state what Southwest policies are for being able to remove the mask temporarily to take a drink or to eat. And they wouldn't budge on that. They just wanted him off the plane. So they're making things up as they go along. You have to assume that there's some kind of political considerations being made for this kind of really ruthless enforcement, because where else under what circumstance do you think it would be possible to kick somebody off a plane, especially if they're black right now? There's definitely politics aside baked into this.
And to Southwest's credit, She posted on Facebook after the fact that Southwest did rebook her to travel with her group to their end destination and apologize for what had happened.
But what had happened? But see, what the hell is? It's not a matter of okay, we're sorry about that. It's like what do you? It's the crew needs to answer for why they did what they did.
I know there won't be any repercussions, and you have no recourse. You can literally get arrested on a plane if that happens. It's insane.
I'm not going on a plane for a long, long time.
Well, I have to go on a plane. I'm going on a plane for election night.
Well, just peek your nose over the top.
Yeah, and
I don't put... Whenever I have to walk into a place... There's only a couple of places I go into that require a mask. I never have my nose covered. I never do.
I splurged a little bit on this one because I didn't want to be stuck in a row with people that were going to be bitchy about that stuff. So I splurged a little bit to be able to try and avoid it.
What would you get, like first class?
Yeah.
Well, good.
I never fly anywhere.
I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You saw the CDC reports that 85% of people who wore masks all the time or...
It's like the masks are causing it, Frank.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're sitting there. You're sucking on a tailpipe the entire day, thinking that you're saving the world. You're an idiot. And it's 85% of people who are wearing masks all the time or most of the time, some of the time, are getting the virus. And only about 3% of people who are not wearing masks got the virus. Just like most people who stayed home, who were in lockdown or staying home, were getting it at home. You remember we got that back in the spring?
Fill me in on that, because I don't.
That was back in the spring. It was one of those things that came out of New York, that another one, close to 80% of people or something like that, that were, hold on a second.
As New York prepares to lock down again.
New York COVID stay at. Let me see if this comes up with anything. Okay, this is from May. This is from May 6th of this year.
Yeah.
Cuomo says it's shocking. Most new coronavirus hospitalizations are people who had been staying home. Early look at data from 100 New York hospitals shows that 66% of new admissions related to the virus are people who were at home, Cuomo said. That was back in May. These are the things and then, of course, you know, months later, we have the CDC saying that 85% of people who wrap their head up in whatever kind of cloth they can find in their closet,
ugh,
they are sicker than those who are breathing open fresh air. And not to mention the fact that you're not doing anything. You're not doing anything to keep this stuff in. The virus passes right through this.
Yeah.
How many times you got to watch a medical professional put a mask on their head and then go and take a puff off of their vaporizer, their mod box, and you can see where the air goes and how you're not doing anything. It wafts all through the room. And you think that you're going to get onto a flying tube of toothpaste in an airplane and you're going to have a mask on your face and that's not going to be recycled with the entire air filtration system? I mean, even especially on a plane, what you breathe is being pumped through.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. That's like the worst place to be. Everybody gets sick once they go flying and stuff.
Everybody. You know, you get sick. Colds, sore throats.
Yep.
Planes are the greatest way to get everybody on the damn in the cabin sick.
Well, gee, I'm so excited.
Well, up your vitamin C before you get up there.
I have been like dosing myself with like amazing vitamins. Did I tell you? Oh, I don't think I did. I interviewed a bunch of docs at the American Priority Conference that gave me a little bit of a. Actually, I can't. I probably shouldn't share it just in case it's like deemed to be medical advice or something, and then someone sues the hell out of me. They gave me like a little cocktail of vitamins that I could take that has been shown to be a prophylactic. It has to do with zinc and another vitamin with the Q that I can't pronounce.
CoQ10?
No. It starts with the Q. It's like a different vitamin of some kind. I don't remember the name of it. But I ordered it and I'm just going to take it because why not, you know? It's a vitamin. For goodness
Absolutely.
Sakes.
Why not?
And one last thing before we go today, Frank.
What?
You know who else I interviewed?
Who?
Joe Collins.
Really?
Yes. What a superstar.
What did you talk about?
We talked about what he's done in his district while he's campaigning that is just absolutely revolutionary, in my opinion. He has given out food. He has fed the hungry. He has done cleanups. He has been there for the community in ways that Maxine Waters has never been there for her community.
Where's she been lately? God, I feel like she's
I don't know.
Doesn't it feel like she's like been MIA? Like get her out of public sight for a while.
She's been at the gasoline station.
Yeah.
But here.
Taking aim at Maxine Waters' luxurious Los Angeles living in a new campaign ad. Watch.
Do you know where I am right now? Maxine Waters' $6 million mansion. Do you know where I'm not right now? Maxine Waters' district.
Collins blasting his opponent for increased crime and poverty. In the district, Waters has represented for 44 years. The 13-year Navy veteran who fought in the Iraq War says Waters is not fighting for her own district.
She is not fighting. Like, I loved when Nancy Pelosi got on with Wolf Blitzer and told Wolf.
Oh, that was the other thing I wanted to talk about. I have the clip.
Can you imagine Nancy Pelosi telling Wolf Blitzer on his spot on CNN that he and his colleagues are always acting as apologists for the Republicans? What does he have to do more, Nancy? What would CNN look like if it was adequately pro-Democrat for Nancy Pelosi? If this is what being a Republican apologist looks like? Go play it. Okay.
I will play it because, you know, it was amazing. He tried to end it for her and she just couldn't effing let it go. She couldn't let it go. She just kept going and he kept trying to end the segment and then they went, here we go.
Tax credit in their proposal either. But let's not go into that.
Yeah,
you evidently do
that.
Not respect the chairman of the committees who wrote these bills.
I respect
and
all of you.
I wish you would respect the knowledge that goes into getting meeting the needs of the American people. But again, you've been on a jag defending the administration all this time with no knowledge of
defending the administration
all this time.
The difference between our two bills, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that to you in person.
All right, Madam Speaker, these are incredibly difficult times right now, and we'll leave it on that note. Thank you so much for joining
us. We'll leave it on the vote that you are not right on this, Wolf, and I hate to say that to you, but I feel confident about it, and I feel confident about my colleagues, and I feel confidence in my chairs.
And it's not about me. It's about millions of Americans who can't put food on the table, who can't pay the rent,
and we represent them, and we represent them. We represent them.
As we say,
we know them. We represent them.
Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, as they say.
It is
here
nowhere near perfect.
Madam Speaker.
Always the case, but we're not even close to the good.
All right, let's see what happens, because every day is critically, critically important. Thanks so much
for
joining us.
Thank you for your sensitivity to our constituents' needs.
I am sensitive to them because I see them on the street begging for food, begging for money. Madam Speaker, thank you so much.
Have you fed them? We feed them.
Yeah, now it's an argument about who can bring the trough over to the lowly peasants quick enough from the $2,000 of ice cream that she
had. You
know,
I didn't hear this. I never heard that. I didn't hear this, how far this went.
Oh, yeah. It kept going, too. There's another like
this is all very new. I played this on my show last night, but it didn't go this far.
Yeah.
What the hell? Did you feed them? We feed them. You don't feed anybody. I love when she said earlier on in this conversation, I know what my constituents need. San Francisco is rotting. It's rotting. What the hell are you talking about?
She was so outnumbered on this one, and she looked so out of touch, it wasn't even funny. I mean, I was like taken aback by how we represent them, we represent them, we represent them. You're not representing anybody right now. And Wolf Blitzer knows it better than you do. I was shocked at his compassion. Shocked. That he actually cared.
Well, I mean,
And placed the blame where it belongs. They all
know.
They all know that it's the Democrats holding this up, and they're trying to stop them from doing it because they know it's a bad look for the election. That was the political motive behind that push.
I can't. The one thing that Wolf could not ever let him bring himself to say is, Nancy, what more do you want me to do?
Yeah, right.
I mean, this is a network. This is a small circle of networks that has bent over backwards, twisted underneath, come back around and bent over again to be able to sell this party's ideology, because it walks in lockstep with it. And to say that they're being short-sighted and apologists and
holding water,
God.
And, you know, carrying water for the...
Yeah.
Unreal.
Unreal. Well, guess what, Frank? We're at the end of the show today. We're at the end of the show.
Get out of here.
You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Hump Day, Val, and
Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you back here again on Friday.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.